culture for me is not only what people do, but how they do it and why they do it. The how and the why they do it is the magic.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to this episode of The Safari, and we are speaking about culture, as you know, for this latest season. And it's really my pleasure to have Colin Walsh with me, who is the CEO of Way Haircare, which was founded by Jen Atkin, who is probably one of the most famous, if not the most famous and accomplished hairstylist in the world. And she built this brand, and he joined the company 4 years ago. They recently sold to Procter & Gamble, but they are very much running autonomously and still both of them very much at the helm running this wonderful business. And it's really amazing to hear how they both show up. But through Colin's lens and through Colin's vantage point, we will hear a lot about, you know, his tricks of the trade and how he ultimately uses humility, curiosity, and heavy communication to get everyone onto the same page. So it's really one to stick around for, because Colin is a master at this craft on returning culture. Colin, thank you so much for joining me on The Safari. It's such a pleasure to have you here today.
My pleasure to be here, Marty. I'm happy. We've taken a little time to connect, but I'm thrilled to be here.
So where does this podcast find you?
It finds me in my home in Larchmont, New York, just outside of the city.
Oh, well, that's an area of the country that is near and dear to my heart, because I actually got married in Westchester. So I won't bore everyone with that, but I spent a lot of time in Rye. So there you go.
it's beautiful. I'm very grateful. I have two kids that love it here. The schools, we're just very lucky and very grateful. So.
Well, Colin, you know, it's been we met recently at a conference in California, and I heard you speak about culture, and culture, as many people know, is sort of the tent pole of one of the most important tent poles of our company. I'm doing a series this year, literally with culture at the center of it, for the Safari podcast, and your words around how you show up as a leader and how you really, you know, stand behind everyone in a way, and that the first will be last and the last will be first kind of thing. And that your way you support and everyone being lifted up by you and the sort of the oxygen you create in the room was very inspirational to me and very moving. And we'll get into that in a little bit, but I think, thank you is what I'm trying to get to for doing this. And I think for everyone listening, Way is an incredible business. You are the CEO of it. You've been there for a while now and are at the helm of a company that, I love saying it, Way. I'm French, so, you know, Way is, I think, the little French word for yes, but maybe in a slang version. Tell us how you came to the company. Tell us a little bit about the brand, and then we'll take it from there.
Sure. It's Way, or yeah, it's the casual French yes, as you well know. And I've been the CEO for about 4 years, a little over 4 years. And I came to it through the private equity investors in that, Josh and Julian from ACG. And previously to that, I was the CEO at Diva Curl. So I had had a similar role in terms of in the beauty industry and the hair industry. And I met Josh and Julian, and then I met Jen Atkin, who is the founder, quite a famous and remarkable founder and a remarkable individual. And that's what struck me when I met her. I knew the brand, obviously being in the industry, it was predominantly a hair brand at the time. But Jen was really, really passionate about product, about innovation, about the fragrance, about some of the core fundamentals of the product. And really a remarkable, sincere, authentic person who previously had not run a company. And that's fundamentally where my role comes into play as a CEO, supporting a founder's vision of the product who typically doesn't have experience or expertise in building an organization, or more importantly, I think as you and I would talk about, building a culture. So that's where I've come in. As I said, been there 4 years and it's been an exciting ride. We've grown very rapidly. At the end of the beginning of 22, end of 21, we sold to Procter & Gamble. So that's obviously a big milestone. Culture plays a huge role of how do you live, survive a culture through an exit, an acquisition.
And integration, yeah.
Yeah. And so the past year has been really remarkable. Another chapter for the organization. I'm thrilled to still be there. Thrilled that literally every single team member who was with this organization, save for one actually, who left willingly for another personal adventure, is still with the organization now a year later. And I think that speaks volumes around culture and engagement, how people feel about working at Way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so speaking about Jen for a moment, I believe she got her start actually being a stylist. And she, I've read some articles about her, and she uses words like, you know, it's a tale of humility is one of the expressions she uses. And I tried to keep a smile on my face, have a good attitude, develop human relationships. I always tried to be a good listener. It's almost as though her sort of way of describing herself and how she tried to be when she founded the company are indeed some of the tenets of great leadership and great cultural engagement. Am I right in picking that up, do you think?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Jen has had a remarkable career. She is a stylist. She's been a stylist for over 20 years. She moved, and most of this is available in her book in other formats, so I wouldn't ever share anything beyond that. But Jen relocated from Utah over 20 years ago, was an assistant and a stylist, really self-made, and built this remarkable career being a session stylist or a hairstylist kind of on photo shoots and films and things for some of the world's biggest celebrities. She gained her most notoriety, I would say, as Kim Kardashian's hairdresser and the rest of the Kardashians she's both close with and works with. And so I think that really brought her to fame. And with even that immense amount of notoriety, the New York Times named her the most powerful hairdresser in the world at one time. And with all of that success and notoriety, Jen absolutely is personally grounded, humble, responsible, authentic, approachable. And that is, to your point, the foundation, I think, of a healthy culture is, as you would talk about, a lack of ego or, you know, strong, raging humility, which I think she possesses. I know she possesses, and was one of my big attractions to her. Founders come in all forms, of course, like CEOs and anyone else in the world, in finding the right synergy of beliefs. And it was that humility that really attracted me to her in the business and where I thought we could be really great partners.
So unless you were born under a rock, you probably know, obviously, of Way. But explain for those who may not be as familiar, the business of the business, so that when we do talk about culture, the team, the people you have to nurture, the divisions that you have to create that cross-functional expertise across the whole business, presumably direct-to-consumer, there is probably retail, maybe there's even a professional selling professionally into the salons. I don't know the full details, but set the stage for the business you're running.
Yeah. So Way itself is a business that is going to be 7 years old. So still a very young business, relatively. The product originally, we're a hair care brand. We started shampoos, conditioners, styling products. But the real difference, Jen felt when she launched it, that most hair care products, in her words, were created by old men in boardrooms. They didn't relate to that female consumer. They didn't feel relevant. They didn't feel understanding, compassionate. And so she really wanted a brand that was relevant, socially relevant, and also delivered a level of elegance. So fragrance was a big part of it. Mm-hmm. She had designed all the fragrance and partnered with Firmenich and had beautiful fragrances, four fragrances across the line. So it was really this beautiful, elegant, thoughtful, socially relevant, and I would say really took off on Instagram and became the brand of choice early on. And that was the seed she had planted. From there, it's been built in. We've expanded into fragrance themselves, body. We've done some home with candles. So we've extended the range and still with those core values of relating to very specifically and directly with our customers in conversation with, not talking at, and creating these remarkable products that really perform. And that's kind of an integrity piece, whether it's in your business or in your brand, is do you keep the promises you make, including performance? And so that's what we've built the brand on. Today, when I arrived 4 years ago, we had 16 employees. Currently, we have just about 70, and which is another remarkable thing I think we can touch on about team size and how a culture really, I would tell you, superpowers teams. They don't need to be as big in number because they're much bigger in force. We're a team of around 70, and the business has grown fivefold over those 4 years. And we're in this really remarkable space. We're continuing to grow. Last year, we grew at nearly 60% year over year. So it's a really dynamic, exciting business. And I would tell you singularly, it is the result of those nearly 70 human beings that wake up and run it every single day.
Well, there we go. So let's talk about that superpower. And, you and I were talking a little bit off mic before this about the return on culture, this ability for the investment in a human being, in a team, ultimately in this greater service of the enterprise. So enterprise on top, team below that, and then the individual. But if you think about each of those three components, they're all members, or they're all one organism. And if you invest in that culture, and in therefore in those three organisms that subsist off of each other, you end up having this universe that can ultimately, bash through walls on behalf of the CEO or whomever it is that is underneath that culture. What are some of the things that you felt were there as the underpinnings of a business that could effectively be nurtured by you as a CEO who cares deeply about this stuff? And then what do you think you maybe thought of to position it, to maybe institutionalize that culture a little bit more, indeed for a sale to a huge conglomerate, and for it today to continue to thrive within that conglomerate? Because ultimately, future-proofing any business, regardless of whether it's owned by a big multinational or not, is about how to make sure it's sustainable.
I would say it's a really good question, and I may pull it apart and answer it in different pieces. But what was there was this remarkable, it was a great product. There was a lot of excitement or energy around it. Working with that level of excitement and energy, that's kind of the raw matter of culture or potential. And so there was excitement. There was a real lack of structure to the organization. There was very little to no clear communication protocols, organizational structure. So there was a lot of classic organizational dysfunction, but a really wonderful and remarkable group of people who were very excited and passionate about this business. And I can tell you, on my first day, I had one-on-ones with everybody. And I expected, given the velocity of launches and everything they were doing, I was expecting to meet with an overwhelmed group of, a small group of individuals. Each one was still excited, energetic, and passionate. And each to a person believed in Jen, believed in her values. And so there was goodwill, belief, trust, and energy. So those were, I'd say, the fertile ground that I saw. The brand itself had challenges. The business has actually had flatlined almost. It was nearly flat year over year. It had overproduced launches that weren't being as productive. So some of the business mechanics were really challenged. And this team would eventually tire if not kind of enabled and empowered. So that was what I saw. And what I believe, you talked about the enterprise and the leader and the employees or the team. Without being dramatic or cliche, I would absolutely invert that pyramid. It is, the business is driven, the enterprise is driven by the force capabilities and alignment of the individuals. And I think it's a really interesting balance as a leader, because I think my personal belief is you have to hold the responsibility of being a leader and the impact you have on everyone who works in the organization very deeply and sincerely. At the same time, holding your title in your role very lightly, because I think you can get a distorted view of the world and your role as the quote unquote boss, the one who makes the decisions. Because making the best decisions is always going to involve a deep understanding of the team, people closest to the business every day by function, and understanding how they're feeling, what they're doing, and how they're doing it. And if I try to reduce, which is an impossible task, reduce what culture is, culture for me is not only what people do, but how they do it and why they do it. The how and the why they do it is the magic of a lot of businesses. A lot of beauty businesses like mine do a lot of the same things: manufacture product, warehouse, sell through retail. Though they do a lot of the same what's, how and why they do it, that's where culture lives. And there has to be a real conviction from a leader that this is going to be clear, aligned, and understood and shared in the organization, while at the same time being subject to those ideals, or we call them culture codes. Lots of people have vision or values, but shared values and beliefs that we believe in, that drives the why and how we do everything each day. And I have to be subject to those as well, mm-hmm. because I, like every other employee, I'm going to have good days, bad days, be less than what I'd like to be. And I think that's a key component of how you start to create that flywheel of culture.
We'll be right back. I want to take a second to explain to you why Traub is able to bring you the Safari. We pride ourselves in being at the very center of a very global, very complicated consumer and retail landscape. And in our travels, as we help think, manage, and expand businesses in many different channels and geographies, we're able to meet and learn from some of the great minds in this industry, and it's really wonderful to be able to bring them to you. And in doing so, I hope that you, the listener, will be able to learn a little bit more about what we do at Traub as well. Back to the Safari. Yeah, it's interesting. This, coming back to the word humility, I hear you, and I think of the expression or the quote, which is, you know, keep your head up in defeat and keep your head down in victory, you know, so that you can't let it get to your head collectively or as a CEO. You have to constantly come back to being humble and listening to the customer, listening to the employees. We call it here sort of, you use the term inverted pyramid, and we use a similar term, which is this notion of a company being inside out and upside down such that the CEO is at the bottom so that the ideas can fall down to him easily versus having to clamber their way up. And then inside out, meaning let everyone in, let's everyone into the conversation, let the customer into the conversation to show that transparency of what's actually going on. And I think that the companies that are thriving today, you guys chiefly among them, among the pantheon of great brands today, are really doing that well in a way that is the antithesis to maybe what happened in the 20th century, which was, you know, it's a hierarchy on the one hand, and we're going to tell our employees what to do such that there is no diversity of interest, no diversity of ideas around how, you know, that creativity is brought to market to the consumer. But also I think that ultimately the great brands today are thriving because of the way they speak to transparency, to the fact that we're not hiding anything from you. There's nothing you're going to get from us that is BS. You're actually going to be able to see under the hood, feel under the hood, understand how careful we are with active ingredients or whatever it may be within the industry, because it's so powerful today because the consumer is so educated, right? I mean, 50 years ago, no one had a clue. No one even bothered to take a look under the hood. And I think that's what's so wonderful about your business and about the care that is taken around all of the different elements and ingredients is a broad term for, yes, a beauty business, but it's also the ingredients to a culture that I find fascinating. How do you see that culture show up in your communication to your consumers? You know, do you give license to people? I mean, how vetted, how structured are the ideas that come from your marketing team, for example, your social media team? How do you put guardrails around something when it may end up feeling inorganic if you did that?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And I'm gonna have to back it up a little, I think, to walk to that. If speaking the brand to the customer is a little further down the road, upfront is clarity around those shared values. Those shared values create communication, trust, transparency, and relationship in amongst each other as a team. So creating that trust and transparency is identifying what are these shared values. And really critically to that point, I believe you don't create shared values that are different and distinct from your brand. They have to apply to flawlessly, seamlessly, and equally to your brand and your business of how do you execute the business. So for example, one of our culture codes is we don't compete, we collaborate. That seems obvious on its face. So internally, we're not competing against each other. We work together cross-functionally as teams, best ideas come, we share. We don't see each other internally as competitors, not to your next job, your next opportunity. As a brand, we also don't see other brands as competitors, not because they're not remarkable, but because we're not in competition with you. We celebrate some of the best brands in our category. We show their content. We celebrate their success. We congratulate their formulas. We show images of them in our team shower on our Instagram feed. That's a philosophy that needs to mirror both. So it's those type of philosophies. Another one is we believe you ask questions to get the best answers. At its core, that's a behavior around curiosity. That's around, guys, I and you probably don't have the right, let's have ask ourselves really good questions before we make decisions. Before we launch a product, let's ask our customer. Instead of deciding, we know what they want, let's ask.
Yeah, you guys do some crowdsourcing and such, right?
So that curiosity that in just those two behaviors, and I could tell you how they play out internally, when we communicate to our customer, we don't speak about competitors in any way other than celebratory or relational. We don't live in some brand silo where only we exist in people's lives. And the curiosity is engagement, is asking for opinions, is asking for feedback. And we also have one that is, we keep it real no matter what. This is a really simple but profound one. And I think it can show up in lots of really dramatic times, like in COVID and how we're dealing with the risk and challenges we faced, or practically when a launch doesn't work or a product doesn't work. One of our most viral pieces of content we created were mean tweets about people who hated one of the products we had. It was called dry shampoo foam. And we had a problem in manufacturing that it would occasionally release its contents into the bathrooms of some of our customers or their purse, God forbid. But they really hated it. And they didn't like the fragrance. They didn't like the food. So we shared all of it in our social feed. Of course, it's not a successful product for us any longer. But it was true. It was what they felt. It didn't matter whether we wanted it to work. We didn't have it right. We didn't have the formula right, the packaging right. And we owned it and we kept it real no matter what. And that's where that license and trust, our team is really grounded that, well, no, if we're being honest and true, and if we're open and asking a question of our customer or responding to their comments, we don't have hard guidelines. We don't have, can't be said, can be said. Was it true? Was it authentic? Was it keeping it real no matter what? And when it adheres to those values, both internally, it allows a lot of guidance and clarity for external communication.
So I have this vision of you guys being in a meeting when that happened, or just before you put those tweets or Instagrams out around that subject, that there could have been a young staffer who had this idea. Now, maybe it came from you, maybe it came from Jen, but it probably came from someone else. Let's just own it. Let's put it out there.
It came from a young staffer.
All right. So how do you create the safety in a room? And I talk a lot about this as to, you know, how to make people feel comfortable that they can speak up to power, even if it's not really power, it's perceived power because it's the boss, right? It's a traditional hierarchical power structure. How did that person feel safe enough to pipe up in the meeting or afterwards to what ordinarily might have been considered a, you know, what the hell is she thinking or he thinking? How does the culture support that individual to speak up, which is, I think, just so powerful because it's a good idea.
Yeah. And I think it's a series of behaviors and moments that lead to it and will continue to. You're only creating as much safety and security in an organization as you continue to show and develop each and every day. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the idea of humility and head up in defeat and head down in victory. I would add a spin to that, I think you can do a disservice to a team if your head goes down in victory, not because you deserve the victory. I promise you there are people that own that victory in your organization. And if you aren't looking to celebrate the individuals whose hands, hearts, and minds were on the victory, that's where people understand success is celebrated for them, by them, not held by me, because my hands very candidly, and I would speak on behalf of all CEOs, are very rarely on the actual levers of execution on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And so success being a trigger, not to take it in, but actually to make sure you know where it should land, creates acknowledgement, creates trust, creates engagement. And that's a real big component. Conversely, things that don't go well, that's where my head is definitely up and I'm sharing and owning. Not falsely, but if I've made a decision or led resources or under-communicated in a way that hasn't helped us, I have to own that. I have to show up with that. So it's behavior that allows people to see we celebrate success. We can make failures. We can make mistakes. We can talk about them openly. It's the conditions of trust that you build and have to not model as an institute, express as a human being, as a CEO. I would like to believe and feel confident sharing every member of my team has a very strong sense of who I am as a person, good, bad, and indifferent. The things I don't do very well, the things I do well, but I believe they truly understand me. And accept me.
Yep.
And that's the ask of everyone else, that you are to be understood, to be accepted for the remarkable person you are and celebrated for the value you create in this organization.
Yeah.
And that creates, I would tell you, the most safety to share ideas.
I love that term you said of the conditions of trust, you know, and for us, you know, the conditions of trust that we try to build in our companies is really one of positivity. Like, to, you know, regardless if it's a bad day for some reason, that at the end of the day, there's a whole group of people who together will solve that problem. And most of these problems, if not all of them, are eminently solvable, right? So let's be positive and chop the wood and we'll get through it. And then the other one is just to lose the ego, right? Like, you know, that idea that, you know, if you are seeking the credit, then ultimately it will be to the detriment of the team. And so if we leave our egos in our pocket and show up with positivity, then that trust will emerge among the people. And I think that it's very hard to do, but it takes, you know, it takes time and it takes a lot of dedication, I'd imagine.
Yeah, well, I think candidly, I feel very fortunate that my passion happens to be and always has been around people, relating to people, understanding people, sharing the journey and story of people. I can tell you my 14-year-old son is quite confused how I've ever become a CEO. Because to him, I don't hold the markers of what a CEO should look and feel like.
Yeah.
He knows me as his father, as the one who can be silly, affable, joking. I can have strong points of view, but he knows me as that person. And that doesn't reconcile in what I think we teach people about what a CEO should be.
Yeah.
And so it takes, I think if I'm being, you know, sharing the naked truth, I feel really lucky, Morty. I feel like I get to just be in and around really talented people, learning from and with. And if it doesn't feel like that to you as a leader, I think it's really challenging to build a dynamic culture. If the rush doesn't come from others and learning from, and it does come from your ideas and how you drive a business, I think you are destined to exhaust, alienate, and lose all the markers of an unhealthy. You lose people, you have high turnover, they're not resilient, you can't handle all the challenges of a growing business.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. So you were right. We could speak for hours, I think. But so to try and tie it up in a bow here, and for a leader, maybe a CEO, but it could be a person running a division, they've newly arrived in that job, and they care about these things. They care about culture and they're listening to this podcast. They may not have the most natural predisposition to act the way you are, the way you show up. Some of this, I think, comes very naturally to you. Some of it's obviously codified, but it's codified through experience, through your natural experience. You touched on, so examples of things that people can do. You touched on one-on-ones. I'd wager you don't have one-on-ones with only your direct reports. I have a feeling you have one-on-ones with more people than that. You talked about holding your title lightly, and you expanded on that earlier. Are there a few other things, a small handful of other things that are top of mind to you that someone listening could, you know, try and take away and implement in their new role or in the role that they're about to take?
For me, fundamentally, simply the deepest rudder you can put in the water as a leader is curiosity, is navigate with curiosity. I think there is a reflex as a leader to have answers. The most powerful, effective leaders have questions, not incessantly, not as the child who keeps asking, but why, to try to trap people, but are genuinely curious about what's working, what isn't working. Where are people feeling inspired? Where are they feeling challenged, frustrated? We all live in a world that's gone through, just in the last couple of years, enormous events, obviously, on all levels. And that impacts different members of the team very differently. Are you curious and aware of how that happens? Are you asking? Are you listening? So I think curiosity for me is the posture that allows you to learn as a leader. In learning as a leader from what your team, as a team that went from 15 people to 70 people, it's a lot of new people, mm-hmm. that then how they integrate, how they bring ideas, how they bring challenges, what they spot as things we could do better. Those, you have to use the force in collective capabilities of the team for the build. You are not the builder alone to build it. And so if you're curious, I think that leads you into the second huge portion, which is communication. In conversation, like any relationship, all the therapists I've ever met in my life would tell you relationships are built on great communication. So if you're curious, did you actually ask the question and listen to the answer? Did you engage in a conversation with a team or a group of team or a cross-functional team? Do you have one-on-ones with people outside of your leadership group? Do you ever talk to customers, retailers in a curious way? In actually, hey, I really want to understand. Yeah. What are we doing well? What could we not do better? All of those pieces, I think that will serve you in good stead. A huge misnomer would be to think you can build a culture and then hold it static. Unfortunately, the world, businesses, teams, dynamics all keep moving. And it is curiosity and conversation and communication that allows you to respond, adapt, morph, grow, and create a team that can continue to perform in new complex circumstances after an acquisition, can still feel autonomous and clear and empowered because are you transparent enough around what the intent is? Are you asking, what are people afraid of? What are you worried will go away? Are you hearing it instead of selling what it will look like? So that would be my single biggest, and I think it's a navigator for life, to be honest. I think the most happy people I know are curious by nature. Being an expert in anything is not an ambition I have. Thankfully, I don't believe I have the capacity to get there either. So if I remain curious, you're a learner. And I have the privilege of 70 teachers every day that teach me about the business I'm responsible to run, how we're doing it well, how we can do it better.
Well, this conversation started with humility. So if I were to distill what you said into three bullet points, it would be humility, curiosity, and communication. Would you say that is the three pillars?
Morty, I feel like maybe we should have done that at the beginning because you clarified my ranting into very concise.
But then we wouldn't be here. We would have been over too quickly, right?
Anyway. Yeah, but absolutely.
Well, listen, I think that's all we have time for today. As I said, I could really speak about this with you for hours. So hopefully we'll get that chance maybe in the near future. But you know, it's a real joy and inspiration to be around someone. And that's why I love doing this, because I do get to meet and spend time with people like you. And I'm not blowing smoke. It gives me hope for, you know, not just our industry, but frankly, business in general. You could be selling widgets. As long as you can try and get the teams rallied around the spirit, the why, the how of any business, and what the end game is for all of them as a community, for all of them as servants to their customers, there's a way to package it properly with energy, and you certainly have that energy in spades. So, you know, frankly, Colin Walsh, thank you so much for doing this podcast with me today.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Morty. I'm grateful to be here. And I tell you honestly that the dirty secret is my greatest passion in life isn't hair care products or even beauty products that I've been in for 20 years. It is this belief that you can create change. I'm really grateful to learn from the people I work with. I'm also really proud that I believe they are seeing and feeling that you can work very differently. And I know they take that with them in their teams. They bring it to work every day. And as they go on into their journey, they'll take it with them. And if I could ever hope to create value in the hours and hours and miles you travel to run a business, that's what will make me feel it was all worth it. So agreed. Sharing it with you is a pleasure. I hope we can do it again. It was a real joy.
Thank you for joining me today. If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying The Safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.